Australian True Crime is an independent podcast. If you help us, we can continue creating and improving our content. That's our promise to you. To support us, simply hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This will help us grow and ensure you're notified as soon as a new episode is released.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging.
This special presentation is sponsored by SBS On Demand, where Season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale is available to stream exclusively right now. Hello everyone, Michelle Laurie here, and welcome to a special presentation in celebration of the release of the brand new season of The Handmaid's Tale. Season 5 is here and it's exclusively on SBS On Demand and you can stream it for free. In fact, the stunning double episode premiere has already dropped and, as you do, I've invited a couple of friends around to talk about it. Our pal Joanna Fleming from Adore Beauty is here. She's a massive Handmaid's Tale nerd and, from the brilliant Eyes on Gilead podcast, we're joined by Fiona Williams. Fiona regularly interviews cast members from the show. She spoke to none other than Elizabeth Moss, the star of the show, recently. And today we'll hear a little bit from her chat with Sam Yeager, who plays Agent Mark Tuello. So, why a special episode about The Handmaid's Tale on our True Crime podcast feed? Well, Margaret Atwood, the author of The Handmaid's Tale, famously said that there's no crime against women in the book that hasn't actually been perpetrated against women in real life somewhere in the world. And did you know it was also Atwood who uttered the famous phrase, "Men are afraid women will laugh at them, women are afraid men will kill them." The original book, The Handmaid's Tale, is a work of dystopian fiction, of course, first published in 1985, when it seemed pessimistic, at best, if not even a little hysterical. It's been banned and even burned many times since, but as the fifth series of the television adaptation gets underway, the idea of a second American Civil War fought over themes of religious fanaticism, totalitarianism, and human rights, particularly women's rights, seems less and less fanciful. The fourth and fifth series also wander into interesting true crime territory by looking at the victim-offender overlap, as some of our heroines find themselves lashing out violently. Please be warned, though, that this conversation does include lots of laughs, as women's conversations about TV shows often do, and millions of spoilers. So I hope you've seen the first two episodes of Season 5. Don't forget, they're sitting right there, exclusively for you to stream on SBS On Demand. And if you have seen both of those episodes, you'll understand why we begin this conversation by discussing the undeniable visual allure of Gilead. Did either of you read the article in The Age today?
No.
About The Handmaid's Tale? Look, I loved, there were some points about it that I appreciated. They were talking about the visual attractiveness of fascism, which I've always I've always understood. You know, we've always talked about that, I think, culturally, about the fascist regimes from fascist Spain, fascist Germany through to modern day China and, you know, North Korea, and how it's that symbolism and that imagery of the perfection is so important to that. And that's what Gilead is all about. And the person, I don't know, I can't remember who wrote it now, was talking about how Canada is so boring, isn't it? In The Handmaid's Tale, it's like, you know, it's great. I mean, you're free. But God, it's so bland, isn't it?
You don't have that tailoring in your outfit.
Oh, and June's like, board games? Oh, she's so disappointed, isn't she, when she goes back in and Luke's like, hey, yay, look, I've got Scrabble and I've got Twister. And she's like, oh, Christ. She looks like, oh, kill me. So this article, you know, referenced that and said, look, this show fetishizes fascism. But also then they go on to say, and look, it's a bit crook that they sort of talk about it as a plot problem that June just wasn't hung years ago, basically. She wasn't put on the wall years ago, and they think that that's a problem with the show. But I've always thought one of my favourite things about this show is it makes me think about the fact that June represents all the other Junes that we aren't seeing through Gilead. I think
Definitely.
You know, it reminds me of those great resistors through history, who many of whom we'll never, ever, ever know about. And I think there's heaps of dunes working away in Gilead.
Absolutely, you know what I mean? Yeah. And the book is like The Handmaid's Tale, but it's all handmaids' tales, just very specifically June's story in this one. And I think that's what the show does really well. It has individual experiences of the same thing.
Mm. And increasingly we're getting a sense of that, don't you think, as the seasons go on, that there is a network. There are lots of people resisting in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have either of you ever tried to explain this show to someone who's never seen it? Because it's the most difficult show to explain to someone. It's like, it's like this dystopian America, but then it's not. And then there's kind of like Canada's still there though. It's very hard to explain to someone. And it sounds like a terrible show when you try to explain it, but it's actually amazing.
Yeah, it does a bit. Or it sounds like a joke show. You know, it could sound like they'll go, like America then.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. In the last couple of years, they'll go, so it's like America. You go, no, yes, hilarious. That's something I find too, though, that people, I mean men, let's be honest, sort of don't take it seriously enough. Do you find that?
I do. And it's so hard to describe the way it tells the story too. I mean, there's the plot, but there's where the alliances are and who, you know, you're in June's head. And how do you explain that in a trying to articulate all of it to someone who isn't fully on board anyway?
No. That's why it's so perfect for women, because it's so complicated, I think. And because we can empathise with Janine.
Janine.
Right? Yep. We can love Janine. We can love her even when she does, you know, want to be loved by Lydia. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, we can even... I was listening to your show, Eyes on Gilead, on the way here, and the latest episode was for me when I was on my way here. And one of your co-hosts said, it's so weird and wrong, but I'm comforted when I hear Aunt Lydia the first time in every season.
It's and true.
I thought, her voice, she's so mean, but there's something about her. She's like a narcissistic boyfriend or something, that you kind of do crave her approval.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There's an element that feels really genuine and loving, but it's also not at the same time.
You want to be a good girl.
Yeah.
When she says
you do, it's so wonderful to be in Lydia's warm glow. Yeah. She has that natural warmth that we saw in her flashback, but also she needs to have that warmth to be the enforcer that she is when you're a bad girl. Mm. So Andout is so amazing in that role. You want to get her approval and you don't want to be told it's your fault and get the bad side.
Oh, God, no, she's terrifying. I had teachers like that. She reminds me, I went to Catholic school. So, well, there you go. And this was in the 80s, Joanna. That's when I went
there.
I also
went to a Catholic school, but it was much more above board.
We had a teacher very much like Lydia, actually, and she wasn't a nun. So she was that outsider. She was clearly a lesbian. But, again, that was not the done thing. It was the 80s in regional Australia. And so, I really see a lot of her in Aunt Lydia.
Yeah, and Lydia's flashback, you know, her strange approach to sex and just that shame spiral she went on immediately when that all went to hell.
And everybody paid for that shame spiral.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that was so awful. Mm. Can we talk about Janine? I found Janine's arc in that last series, series 4, it felt really important, especially as I thought she was dead by the end of it.
Mm. She's had a lot of those moments.
She's 9 lives. Is she dead now? I don't even know.
I don't know.
She's coughing up. She's lost a lot of blood for that chocolate bonbon, whatever that thing was she had. Was it a rumble? I don't know.
I don't know. Or a Linda ball. I'm not sure. But yes.
It was such an interesting arc for her, wasn't it? Because we were finally learning so much more about her, about her background. The Planned Parenthood, how was that?
That was an amazing episode. Again, so timely.
Yes.
They really tap into so many of our lived experiences as women across the board. You know, whatever relationship you might have had with teachers or parents or sisters, you really do feel you can relate to one of the handmaids, even the Marthas. You know, there's someone in the show who feels very familiar to you, which they do so well.
Yeah.
They really do. And Serena too.
And
Mrs. Putnam, for God's sake. You know, that there's just ways that no one's pure evil, no one's a pure heroine. There's so much light and shade to everyone, and that there is something relatable
Oh, there'll be so many women with fertility issues who will have their moments for those women.
I'm one of them. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And before, my twins are IVF twins, and before we went to IVF, we were looking into lots of things, and you know, you have lots of thoughts about, should I even pursue fertility treatment? Should I just accept it? What should I do? And at one point, we went into inter-country adoption, and we went to a weekend seminar and all of that. And that scenario reminds me a lot of The Handmaid's Tale, of just the desperation, the sadness, the extreme emotion. There's so many tears in the toilets of that facility that weekend. You know, so many women who'd never met comforting each other, because they would do anything.
Mm.
And people saying, oh, it'll cost you $60,000 to adopt a baby from this country. And women saying, yes, how can, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's so messed up. You know it's messed up as you're thinking about it, but.
Yeah. You know where it comes from. Mm. It's where they take it. That's the absolute issue. But, no, there was that when we thought or assumed that Serena couldn't fall pregnant and she met Nicole at the airport in Canada that time, that episode broke me. Mm. That was so relatable. Mm-hmm. But, I think they really – the way – that society and women themselves, you know, we view our own bodies and how they play into who we are as people. So they go so deep with this show, and it, that's why we latch onto it, I think.
Yeah,
it
gets absolutely. Us. And at the moment I'm really frustrated by the other women's reactions to June. I feel like they're gaslighting her. They're trying to diminish her anger, or they're trying to talk her out of her anger. They're always telling her to calm down, to just stop thinking about it, just stop talking about it. I don't want to talk. And they're all calm and they're all quiet. And I'm finding that so frustrating to watch, you know.
As is June.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that therapy circle in season four, and I think she said the line, I'm going to mangle the quote, but, you know, don't we have the right to be furious? Haven't we earned this? Mm-hmm. And Emily got it. But
sometimes it happens in her own kitchen.
Absolutely.
She's in her own kitchen talking to Rita, who knows her own experience so well. They were in the same house. And Rita's just like not engaging. She just doesn't want to engage.
Yeah. Moira's much the same. I mean,
very much.
Yeah. She's been out a bit longer, but she's got different ways of coping or not coping.
Yeah.
But June really wants that outlet for her rage, and she can't quell that, as we know.
Although then she does find her tribe.
Mm-hmm. Does she ever?
She finds her tribe in the woods, right?
Yep.
And they tear that man apart, Commander Waterford, Fred, apart literally with their hands and teeth. What do you make, though, of the scene where some of the other women say, well, okay, so now let's go and get my guy, or let's go and get my lady, my monster?
Yeah, we've done yours. Now it's my turn.
I thought that was fair enough.
It was fair enough. I mean, it speaks to the lack of planning and where this could lead. Probably could have had that conversation beforehand. But, that speaks to other experiences and, you know, everyone has their monster.
I also at the same time I was thinking, but she's already kind of done enough. You know, you guys have helped her do something she really needed to do for her healing process, but she got all these people out. She's been, you know, a crusader for everybody. Why does she owe you something else? That was my perspective. Yeah. I was kind of like, leave her alone. You know?
That's fair. She got a plane load of kids out.
Yeah.
That is a really good point.
I was like, she's done enough. Let her live now.
And it's also the imperfection of the show, which is kind of its perfection, I think, is that she's not a perfect hero. She's not a perfect character. It's not predictable. It's not meant to make sense. She's not meant to be Joan of Arc, you know, I guess. So I was shocked and surprised, and I was angry and I was disappointed. I was like, yeah, June, come on. Like, we got to go and get all their monsters, haven't we? Got to, like, you know, you can't just, because a minute ago you were eating your bacon, like, you know, like this had changed everything. And now suddenly you're being reasonable again, like a reasonable person, and handing yourself into the cops and stuff.
Yeah.
But now that you say that, yeah, you're right. And she's, that changeability is a realistic traumatic response for one thing, and yeah, it makes her a kind of more of a realistic person, I guess.
Yeah. I love that first episode back of the fifth season. You know, she's just done this horrendously violent thing that she needed to do, but with those hands that she, like, you know, she walks around with his blood all day and her hands are ripped to shreds, but then she holds her baby. And I think that whole episode is reconciling, how can I be capable of that, but then also go back to my baby and give her a bath and be normal, you know, quote
unquote.
This
is about making that choice too, isn't it? It's like, well, I can't be both. If I want to be a mother, I can't really be going around the countryside tearing these people apart.
I'm not supposed to, yeah.
How did you guys feel about the dynamic that's developing between her and her husband again? Because it's felt very disjointed since she came back, and I try.
I don't want to tell you what happens. You've missed something.
Absolute spoiler coming up.
For everyone listening, I've only watched the first episode back.
Yeah.
So,
But you've picked it beautifully. Right, you have picked it beautifully because the first is kind of the very next thing that happens after where you're up to just is that they're on just the sweetest date and it's the sweetest moment and they've broken through that.
Okay, good. Because I was starting to get a bit worried.
Well, what do you think happens? Who do you think destroys that? Which bitch face do you think ruins that?
Gotcha. The season
is not June and Luke going on dates. Okay. It's not.
And she just, Serena just, it's the, oh, it, you know what it is? It's the intimacy, I think, between Serena and June. And this just shows it so beautifully that she knows exactly how to destroy June. Mm. She knows exactly how to create a moment, God knows, that will get June wherever she is, and it will destroy whatever she's doing, whatever she's rebuilt for herself. It will destroy her and it will bring her psychologically right back to Gilead. It's amazing.
She's a clever character,
well,
Serena.
Well, that's the thing. And I know you guys talk about it on Eyes on Gilead. She has always been the politician, the strategist, the genius in the Waterford household, and he's been the man. It's Cyrano de Bergerac. It is. You know? It's like she's the one whispering in the shrubs.
Absolutely.
And it's so frustrating that she is also was also supportive of this ridiculous regime that sublimated herself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she says to Fred, "How could you take that away from me? How could you take my career and my bitch? You handed it to him.
Read the fine print in your own book.
You wrote the book." Oh, gosh, she's frustrated.
Absolutely. And, you know, much of her resentment stems from then being shut out of this world that she's created. So, but, yeah, you know, it's only terrible when terrible things happen to her. Mm. But the way June and Serena get each other, you know, June sent the finger and so Serena sent her own little message. And they've
very tit-for-tat kind of behaviour, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're so much more brutal than the men.
Yeah.
So much more brutal.
Psychologically brutal.
Yeah. Yes, but now, I mean, June has crossed over into,
fair point.
She's both
into
now.
Proper brutality, I think. Yeah.
Well, Gilead trained her to be that way. It was a salvaging, you know, she'd been trained for.
Yeah. And I'm kind of appreciative of the fact that she's accepting that. She's even verbalising it, you know, the fact that she enjoyed killing someone, that she's enjoyed, there are moments that she's enjoyed someone else's pain and she's accepting of that. She's not pretending. I thought, good.
Yeah.
That's fair enough, bub.
Yeah.
You know.
You earned that right
you
to be
did.
Furious.
You did. Yeah. Mm. Some people are bad. When we all know she's going to go back, she has to go back.
Hannah's there.
And she's Canada's so Hannah. Dull. I mean, I know I've pointed that out before, but I mean.
Do we think they deliberately position Canada? Like they're deliberately making it boring so that we as an audience feel compelled to make her go back because we want action. Mm. We want things to happen. So seeing it be dull, boring, very day-to-day, it kind of makes us as an audience want her to go back there rather than want her to stay with Luke and Moira.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? We've spent years thinking, oh, God, please get to Canada.
Yes. But now that she's there, been there, like, I'm finding myself going, no, actually, go back.
She's been there 2 weeks and I'm like, what have they done to your hair? Oh, what's with the waves? Oh, God. Even when she's covered in blood, the waves are still in that hair. You know,
she's got access to heat tools again.
Ah!
It's the damage.
Yeah. Oh, Oh, their beautiful long hair's gone. I was mesmerised by that hair. She's in the public toilets scrubbing the blood off, but the hair's still in that wave. And Elizabeth Moss directed these first two episodes.
She sure did, yes.
Has she directed any episodes before?
Yeah, she started with last season, and apparently she'd always wanted to, but they were worried about putting too much on her because she's already starring, she's already executive producer. And she said, look, I'm working 24/7 on this anyway, give a busy person a job kind of thing. So so COVID actually presented the opportunity because not as many directors could fly in the way that they would normally. So she did, I want to say three eps last season. She did episode 3 of season 4, which was the June being tortured episode, which had so much in it. That the kiss with Nick, the big pash at the end of that episode. So that, yeah, that one. And this season she's done the first 2 and she's also doing the finale.
Oh, so they're giving her the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because so episode 2 of season 5 is huge.
So beautiful. It's Fred's funeral procession, and it's incredible how prescient to watch during this week when we're watching the Queen's funeral rituals, because it's, and also amongst the conversations about colonialism, because Serena manages to turn Fred's funeral into the most incredible spectacle. She has every dignitary in Gilead, every sexual slave in Gilead, every kind of slave in Gilead. She's forced them all out to be part of this procession that she is leading. She has the dignitaries walking behind. At one point she forces the handmaids to bow to her, to his coffin. It's sickening, but it's so, you know, it really makes you reflect on what's going on.
Absolutely. It's uncanny that this is playing out in the week of when they wrote this months ago and they shot it months ago.
It's really eerie.
Yeah.
It reminds me of what is to me the purpose of the show, which is it could happen again so easily.
Absolutely.
Well, it is happening. I mean, much of it is happening.
Yeah.
Isn't that a scary reality that we look at this and we think there are definite parallels in the world of this occurring, and for us we're probably nowhere near it, but to see that play out on a screen, you're kind of like, wow, this is way too realistic. You know, it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the acceptability of it is the only fantasy level on this show in terms of the acceptability of it by other governments around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really the only level of fantasy. Everything else is actually happening. I mean, I always use this stat. There are more slaves in the world today than there ever have been before, and certainly a lot of sexual slaves in the world. So, yeah, it's all happening, but it's really eerie to watch this procession play out on TV
as it this is week.
In real life this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did it a couple of seasons ago as well with the women in cages episode, and that was right in the week where all the American border, that was such a news moment then too. So, yes, there's parallels all the time, but just in the week of broadcast, it's truly uncanny.
Yeah. I had a conversation. We had Friday night drinks here in our offices last week, I think it was, and I was chatting with some guys. And they were saying, I went off it. My wife and I, we went off The Handmaid's Tale a couple of seasons ago. We just sort of, it jumped the shark.
Mm.
And I thought, really? Which shark? Like, you know, it's all happening, but whatever. I was just trying to be polite. And then one of them said, oh, I suppose it was pretty realistic a couple of years ago, you know, during the whole Trump era. And I was like, there was that whole overturning of the abortion rights in America. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, like a couple of months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, America's still got some issues around women's rights.
Yeah, it wasn't just Trump that was the problem.
Nah. Yeah. So it's fascinating to me how still, there are a lot of people who don't think that these things are happening or are unaware of how much of this is, no matter how many times she says it, no matter how many times it's repeated, that everything that happens in this book is based on things that are really happening to women in the world. Do you find that? Do you think that it's not, you know, that people are still unaware of that?
I think they must be. But it's known about the book, but I think people might make assumptions that the show has taken
That's what I think, because, you know, the first series of the show was based on the book. Do you think that, Joanna? Do you think people think that, oh, now we're in fantasy land because we've left the book?
Yeah, I think there's a definite perception that, oh, now we're just making it up as we go. And I think a lot of that, as you said before, you made mention of, you know, men think that. And I do think it's very much probably the male audience that are like, oh, this is just too far. But for us as women who probably look into this stuff a lot more and read about this stuff a lot more that affects women around the world, we're kind of like, no, this is a very stark reality. And it's not so far from what is realistic and what could happen.
Yeah. The show has absolutely stayed true to that. And I think that's where it holds up. You know, it's like they research like you would not believe and speak to experts and but also if they can't really show what actually happens in the world like that it's worse. So it's if you can't handle that, it I think you're telling on yourself a little bit as well.
Yeah.
If you don't believe that that's true, I mean.
You know? No, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you work at SBS, so you work with people who have been to places where that where things happen and come from places where things like that happen. I've been to refugee camps overseas where people have that lived experience where it's still happening. So, yeah, it is frustrating when to sit in a nice cafe in Melbourne and have a lovely chap say, oh, let's jump the shark, that show.
Yeah, you hear the torture porn kind of thing.
Torture porn.
I have no truck with that. It's, you know, and also it's, is it because it's a blonde blue-eyed woman that
you,
it's happening?
I was just going to ask you that. Is it because it's a white lady's being tortured? Is that why it seems like it's fantasy? Such an interesting creative decision to have the last episode of the last season, season four, directed by someone who's generally a documentary maker. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, Liz Garbus directed the season four finale, and she's known for her documentary work, and particularly you guys would know I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Oh, my gosh. I just watched it again last night because I was reminded of it. And isn't it brilliant? It's so great. Such a good documentary because it's such a difficult story. It could have been about a woman who was a true crime fan who at nighttime after her child was in bed was online trying to solve this crime, this cold case crime about a rapist. And she bloody did. She did crack it. But just – and also, by the way, married to a very famous, beautiful comedian, Patton Oswalt. And then just before she kind of really cracked the case, she died in her sleep. Yeah. She mixed some medication and she died. She's a very young woman. So it was sort of difficult because she was just on the verge of cracking this case. She was just on the verge of writing a book. But they managed to make a great documentary about all of the above.
Absolutely.
And this is the woman who made it.
Yeah, Liz Garbus. She is a producer and director. And yes, we interviewed her for an episode of Eyes on Gilly to unpack the finale. And she was speaking to the fact that that really helped her get in the mindset of June for the finale. And just because I'll Be Gone in the Dark has survivor testimonies as well as a bit of recreation. So
she did such a great job. We've got a little bit of her talking about it here.
You know, as we all know, The Handmaid's Tale contains harrowing echoes of realistic events. And while Gilead is not a real world and these are fictional characters, the psychology is very, very real and very grounded in true experiences and reactions to trauma. I had made a series for HBO called I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which featured many survivors of a serial rapist and killer who terrorized California in the 1970s. And their recollections and observations on coping with trauma were so helpful to me, and I shared them. And I think it became a very rich conversation we were able to have. So yes, I think that the documentary work I have done certainly helped guide me in directing Handmaid's Tale.
She did such a great job in the documentary of dealing with these survivors because their attacks had happened decades earlier. So to approach those women and ask them to speak about it is hard, and to sit with them and take them back to that attack is hard because no doubt they've found their own ways in the intervening decades to cope with it.
Yeah.
To get past it. So to ask them to go back to it is a really massive ask. She did a great job. But, yeah, it's fascinating that she was able to use that in making this episode.
She used the fact that in that episode where June goes to see Fred and we all think she's going to glass him in the in the prison or something, but doesn't, but he apologises you know, in inverted commas, but it's something and it's also nothing. But she makes the point that for a lot of survivors, that's a huge trigger, having the perpetrator apologize to you and for you to know that they don't understand it at all and they think that that's a make good. And, you know, that's the moment that June goes, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
So, snaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the way he always seems to feel as though the fact that he admires her is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
He's so...
She should be grateful for his affection.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that he's like, that he treats her well. It's all that, isn't it? It's that, and it's again, very colonial.
Totally.
Isn't it? It's this attitude that I don't beat you, so I'm a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, other guys down the road, I mean, they're bad guys.
You've got it pretty good.
Yeah. Can you tell us about Joanna? Wait till you hear. I don't know if you're onto this theory, but I was stunned because I was like biting my fingernails when I thought, oh, I wonder if I can ask Fiona if there's like any sympathy at all for Serena, or is that just insane?
I can't have sympathy for her. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. When they tell her about Fred, I'm just like, yeah, that's fair enough that they did that. Like I thought she'd be relieved. But
yeah.
I can understand why some people would feel that sympathy for her. I did feel twinges of it when Nicole was taken. I could feel that, and in that episode again at the airport and all of that stuff, yes. But around this particular time, no, I'm not feeling it.
No, because she came good for a while.
Yeah.
But I knew when she was back in that other house and that lady, that creepy lady, had all those children. Mm. And I saw her snap. I saw Serena turn. I thought, oh, no, we've lost her. We've lost her.
Right.
And from that point on, I thought, no, she's just evil. She's no good. But these guys on Eyes on Gilead have the most incredible. It's not even your theory. It's come from the set. This is Juliet and Juliet.
Yes.
Tell Joanna about
Fill
this.
Me in.
That's correct. Yes. I was lucky to interview Elizabeth Moss on the eve of the series premiere. And yes, I'd heard that she and Yvonne Strahovski refer to their own characters as Juliet and Juliet. And that is the real love story that is the through line of this series. And that back in the episode you alluded to, Michelle, with where they worked together and they were really productive back when Fred was injured in the Bob Blast and whatnot. And they proved they could be formidable. But then, of course, Serena flipped and that all went to hell. But then in the Washington episodes, season three.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful too, those episodes.
Yes.
There's incredible shots at the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes.
The lighting, it was so beautiful. And June would go sweeping through in her red cloak.
Absolutely. Yeah, the wind.
Oh, yes.
But they had the epic argument at the Lincoln Memorial with the echoey chambers and whatnot. It was that she identified that as that was the moment they broke up. That's the end of the love story. And from then, it's been on for young and old. But she did say June still holds out hope that there is redemption for Serena.
Because I think that June has a real when she's fighting with Serena or when she's interacting really, again, intimately with Serena, that's when I see June's real feminist heart. Yeah. Her beating feminist heart where she's looking at Serena like, come on, sister, come on.
Yeah, I've got to break through somehow.
Yeah, come on.
There's a kernel of something I've got to
reach. She's like, you cannot seriously be going to do this to me for them. You can't, you know, she gets this look in her face. And in that scene, I was fascinated by the way they really juxtaposed their physicality as well. There were moments where they were up so close and June was so little and she was little and stocky.
Yeah.
And she was looking right up at Serena and Serena was so tall and ethereal and looking right down her nose at her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really played off their different statures and it was really visually stunning. So what do you think about that? That they're a love affair, Joanna. Isn't that fascinating? It's given me a whole new perspective.
It is fascinating. It's very, and it goes to show how much thought goes into the production and direction of this show for them to have that like underlying message that as an audience, if you're just watching this as a regular person, you wouldn't even think about it unless you really delve into the themes that come through in the show. It is fascinating.
I think it sinks in. I always think these things sink in, you know, on some level in your mind. I used to think that during Game of Thrones. I used to think, oh, what? you know, what? But then I think, no, it's all right. It's sinking in. And after a while, it's kind of, you know, you get it. But especially now that Fred's dead, he's literally gone. There is no man between them.
Yes.
That's coming together for me now. I think, all right, it's just you two ladies.
Yeah. Fred was a distraction. Like he was kind of the man of the household that
he thought was the
worst person who lived there. But
where do we think Nick is going to tie in this season? Because he's popped up. But it's
funny?
Yeah, it's like, where do you belong? I'm not quite sure where you fit in this picture anymore.
What's your story?
I don't know. Every time I think he's going to let her down or he's going to, you know, not be the guy we think he is or need him to be, he always is. He never lets her down, I don't think.
He hasn't. I've never been sure, you know.
Yeah,
because he went away for a little while and we're not sure quite what he told the Swiss. And, but evidently he has been working behind the scenes and, you know, he clearly played a role in getting her in front of Fred in the finale. So he's but he's also a very high-ranking commander in Gilead. Mm. So there's that side too, but.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, Joseph, we've discovered, he's no good. He's just a. You know, initially I thought, he's a goodie. Oh no,
yeah,
just a pragmatist.
He's just out for himself. I think he loved his wife, you know, but he's just out for himself. He's a survivalist. But I think Nick, ultimately, maybe he's going to be the guy. Is he going to be the good guy? I mean, Luke's a nice guy, but he's never had to prove it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more of Luke. He needs to, I think, for just as a character in the show. I think he's always been on the sidelines. You can see he's kind of shut. Even in Canada, it's more a woman's world. It's the women who are getting things done and working through all their trauma. He's in his own no man's land, really.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful there's more.
Although Luke reminds me of the modern man's malaise in a way, in that there kind of is no place for him.
Yeah.
The only place there is for him is to be just really supportive.
Yeah, yeah, just waiting, you know. Waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, just there. Shall I put the kettle on? I'll just leave you ladies to it. I'll put the kettle on and I'll bath the baby. No worries, Bubba. I'll bath the baby. I'll put the kettle on. I'll
get your glass of wine.
Yeah, I'll get the wine in, shall I? I'll get the board games. Yay.
Who's for Scrabble?
Yeah. I won't do anything terrible, but I'm not going to save anybody either.
Yeah.
But I think he's had a moment at the end of episode 2.
Did you really?
In seeing a side of things that he may not have before that also is a message maybe to him.
I hope so. I mean, I'm sure he's angry and he's sad that his daughter's trapped in this, you know, hell hole of Gilead, but he's never crossed the border to go and try and find her, or he's never, I can't see him ever doing anything like June has done.
Yeah.
Do we know how many series there are of?
Yes, there's one more.
Oh.
They've just announced there is a season 6 and that's where it's all going to wrap up. Mm. That said, there is the spin-off, The Testaments. So.
What? Yeah. Are you even talking about? I don't know about that.
What? Yes, there was the book, The Testaments, that Margaret Atwood, it's a sequel of sorts, and that's kind of the North Star where Handmaids has to sort of connect with that. Quite a feat, I think, having read The Testaments, but nonetheless, it's not all of the key characters of who we see, that some are there, one in particular, but anyway, Bruce Miller is doing that as a separate show, but they're wrapping up The Handmaids as we know it with season 6 next one more to go.
Who's in Testaments? Tell us who.
Well, Lydia features.
Ah, great.
And some of the next generation.
Okay.
So who we know. Yes. So it's a funny one because The Handmaid's Tale, the book, ended with that future postscript that it was at a conference and it was many, many years in the future and it was kind of these, you know, they'd found these tapes from this handmaid. Mm. So we're kind of in that world at the moment. We're in that big gap. But the Testaments has borrowed from what the series has created in some of the characters and then it's kind of joining the dots on those. So
another thing I love is these weirdos in Canada who are really into Gilead.
Oof. Yes.
You know?
In the first episode where Serena's walking out.
Yes.
And they've got the candle lit vigil. I thought, who are they?
Yeah, right. I think she thought the same thing initially.
Yeah.
I think at the top of the stairs she's thinking, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh. Bless
We're
you.
With you, Serena.
Yeah, she's like, what?
Yeah, and that feels quite puffed up by the end of that little walk to the car.
I think that's what really turned her around, don't you?
The transformation in her demeanour is so good.
Yeah. She's literally just come from seeing her husband's corpse, which was quite a sight. Ooh. And I've written a book about the mortuary. They're not going to show her that, by the way. I just had a moment where I thought, oh, well, that's a bit crook. I think they'd put a sheet over it, but, you know. So she's literally just come from that, and she's so defeated, as you would be, and shit scared because I think quite rightly thinking, oh, well, I'm next, obviously. Yeah.
And also she's found out that June's not being punished, like Canada's not pursuing any action, so that she has that furious go at old Tuwillo.
Yes, who's so mad for her, isn't he?
The little Frichon.
Oh, my goodness. Fuck Serena. Oh, God. And they're women too, which is so weird, with their little candles. They really give her they really put a pep in her step.
They really do. Mm. So buck up. We're with you. We did have a hint of that in season four. They were on the way to the trial and we thought they were protesters against them but very much for them.
Yeah.
Again, a bit of a reflection of America, Trump era, not just America, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always that element.
Have you had many people say to you, oh, no, I couldn't watch it anymore. It was too dark. It went too far. You know, have you had a few people say that to you when you're like, oh, no, I'm still really into it. Like I've still got friends at work that watch it and we have a chat about it after it's aired and we're tagging each other on Facebook when we saw when it was coming out, all of that stuff.
I had to have a break during Trumpism. Mm. Yeah. I had to go, oh, God, it's too real. Mm. I need some RuPaul's Drag Race. It's too much. I can't.
Absolutely.
I need to just step my pussy up. I just can't. I can't be watching The Handmaid's Tale for a while. And so I had to drop out.
Yeah, well, Liz Garber said the same thing.
Yeah,
she was watching it and had to stop. But then, you know, when she got the gig, she tapped back into it. But yeah, she said exactly what you just said. Trump era, it's too much. It's too close.
Yeah. Because I felt like we were genuinely losing then. Mm-hmm. I thought we are actually losing. I can't be losing and watch this show about us losing. Mm-hmm. I can't do this.
I also found it challenging to watch during lockdowns. It felt very it just was really, you know, it was hitting home.
I don't know. I leaned in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a downer.
Oh, see, I couldn't.
I can't be watching this with bad hair.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Yeah, I couldn't do that at the same time. I had to just time it outside of lockdowns, which was challenging over the last 2 years.
Where do you predict we're going with The Handmaid's Tale, Joanna? Where are we going with this? Who's going to survive? Is Serena, out of Serena and June, do you think they're both going to survive?
See, I think they're both going to survive. I just feel that they're both going to survive, but it would make for a much more entertaining show if one of them didn't. But I think there's a lot of deaths still to come, a return to Gilead and potentially return back to Canada at some stage, potentially. That's where I'm thinking it's going to head.
Fiona's got me thinking Luke might go to Gilead, but oh, God. Mm. Oh, I'm saying don't take Luke to Gilead.
No, he's not cut out for that.
For God's sake.
He's too busy bathing babies and putting the kettle on.
That's like, it's like when women take their husbands to Kmart. I'm like, why? Why have you brought him?
Who brought him?
Can't he wait outside? Oh, they're like,
Well, I say it's in the trailer, but that's a bait and switch always. I mean, they're not going to spell it all out in the trailer. There's a phrase like, I'm going with you or something. So it's, you know.
And then she turns around and goes, no, you're not. And that's that.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of that chapter. And there goes my theory. I mean, terrible theories. They never pan out. And this is one.
You stay with the baby.
You go home to Moira. I'll go get the milk and we're good. And that's the end of that.
Yeah. I loved it. They've also got a theory about the gun being around.
That gun that's buried very shallowly in the front yard. Yeah, that's not staying there, I don't
think. And we know Emily's not coming back, right? Because the actress left, Alexis
right.
Bledel.
That's
is
right.
That is that why she that? Was cut Bledel. Out of the show like that, in that way? Because that shocked me.
Yeah, it was announced. Yeah, okay. It was announced she's not coming back.
Right.
But in the show they've written that she's gone back to Gilead to see to Aunt Lydia.
Yes. I think it's because she divorced her husband who is a loose goose. So that's another man we can say.
Okay.
Or a shit thing happening.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
How appropriate. Yeah. How bloody appropriate, by the way. And we don't know what's happened to Janine yet.
We don't know.
Saw her coughing up blood.
That's right. Another
poor Janine.
Janine in Jeopardy moment. Poor Janine.
Oh, she's amazing, isn't she? Beautiful little girl. Yeah. I love her so much.
Protect her at all costs.
Who else are we missing? Yeah. Mm.
Esther, we're not sure where she's at too. Speaking of Janine, the pair of them, that was a double attempted murder-suicide.
Yeah. What did she put in that rumble?
I don't know, but I was reminded on Eyes on Gilead that she poisoned the tea for her husband, remember, back in last season. So she's a little alchemist.
She's a little minx. Isn't she that one?
Yeah.
She'll never get a match. She'll never get a pair, they find out.
She won't be a Martha, that's for sure.
No.
Not trusting her to cook dinner.
Who else are we missing out on? Who else do we need to catch up with?
Well, Nick's wife. There's a whole lot of...
she's a bit of fun, actually, isn't she? Yeah. I like how she checked in. She's a good wife.
Mm.
Did you get your business done, doll? Did you get your... You know, she's nice. I like her.
Yeah, that was the turn up.
Mm. And what? Tell us about what interviews you've got coming up on the show. Oof. Because they're amazing.
They're pretty good.
Yeah. You've started with Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah.
Oh, and you've got the lovely American fellow.
We do. We have an episode out at the moment. Sam Yeager, speaking of Tuello. He was fantastic because Tuello, like you say, does he just have the hots for Serena? Or is it a tactic in his diplomatic career? But he's great. I think it's half an hour interview. We go to town. And
one of the great things that I've been able to be a part of this season is watching, you know, for the longest time, like you said, Mark has been an enigma, and we finally get to see more of who Mark is this season. He's had to be diplomatic, is a very polite way of saying it. But, you know, I would say people would think of him as kind of on the fence, and whether he's kind of playing both sides. And there is certainly that to him. But I think his aim is good.
He's great. And we've also got O'Teefe and Begley, plays Luke. He hints a lot. Danced very close to the line with spoilers, but was pretty bad, so. But he's great.
So you had an unfair edge when we were talking about that then.
Yeah. Because I could see she was like, no.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
But honestly, I don't know. And Dowd was hilarious.
Is Yvonne Ostrovsky? Is that how it's
Strahovski.
Strahovski is Serena.
Yes.
Is she Australian?
Yes, she is.
Gosh. Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But God, she's just such an incredible scene stealer. She reminds me of somebody I read once about Brad Pitt, that he's one of those actors who you want in every scene because they just something about their face, something about their charisma, they can just carry, you know, you want to look at them.
Yeah.
And she's that, isn't she?
She is. She's fascinating. You know, we mentioned the scene where she literally just walks, 50 metres and is transformed.
Yes, you're right. She can do that. Shifting her face, and I knew it. You know what she's going to do a lot of the time. In the last shot of the second episode of this series, you know exactly what she's going to do when she's looking down the barrel, and she really takes her time in doing it too, which I love. Mm-hmm. She knows that we're all waiting for her to do it, and it's just a change of facial expression, but it's to die for.
Yeah,
it's to die for because she's got this beautiful face.
Yeah.
She's got this gorgeous face. It's just so symmetrical, and she just knows how to use it.
She really does.
And she takes her time as an actor. I love how she does that. And, she's gorgeous to watch, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. And the way that through the years, and I love that we're 5 seasons in now, so we know them so well. Mm. And, like, the show's known for its flashbacks, but it's flashing back on itself a lot more now. We're not seeing a lot of the pre-Gilead flashbacks because it's been around so long, I guess. But the way that June and Serena have switched roles so often. You know, there was the first series screaming match that was then replicated with Hunter. You know, it was flipped last season with the screaming match. June got to scream in Serena's face. So just the pair of them, again, speaking to this being the central relationship throughout the show, but, yeah, they're so good together.
Yeah, yeah, they're so good together.
Yeah.
And now that she's pregnant, it's so great. Mm. She's so powerful and she's achieved a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's in a room with those other Gilead women and you just think, God, they must want, they'd just be green.
They really would. And Naomi Putnam actually gives Janine a moment of grace to say, just you can see it through tears that she does say, I'm grateful for how we got baby Angela. Which
was that the first or the second?
That is episode two, sorry, yes.
So Janine, goes to the, in fact, Lydia, Aunt Lydia suggests and ensures that Janine gets to see her daughter.
Ah.
She says they're going to the Putnam house and Lydia says, Janine, why don't you come, basically? And Janine's like, can't believe it. She's going to get to see her daughter. So she's standing there in the living room and the little girl runs up to her.
Oh.
It's so beautiful. Obviously she doesn't know who she is, but for whatever reason, she runs straight up to her and they have a little hug. And, of course, everyone's probably thinking, is this one-eyed chick going to lose it again? Because she can.
She has past form.
Yeah, she can lose it. But she pulls herself together and she's really gracious as well. And she says, Mrs. Putnam, you have a beautiful daughter.
Oh.
And we're like, oh, Janine, good for you. And then Mrs. Putnam says, oh, yes, we're very grateful to those who gave her to us. So it's really beautiful. Again, it's a really beautiful moment of interaction between women. I love, to me, that's the strength of the show.
Yeah.
It's that great feminist. It's, to me, it's like, yes, it's just innate. It is in the sisterhood is in us, it could be bashed out of us. People can try and talk us out of it, teach us out of it, beat us out of it.
Mm.
But it's actually just burning in there.
Yeah, even Naomi Putnam can have a moment for Janine.
Basically
threatened that she might take Serena's child back.
Even
her.
And little Janine.
Little Janine. That was a milestone, I thought, for Janine. Yeah. Oh.
Let's hope she survives that rumble, eh?
Yeah. Let's hope she pulls through this time again.
What do you reckon? Maybe you know the answer, but where do you think we're heading with The Handmaid's Tale? Do you know the answer?
I know a couple of things, but I shouldn't share them.
No, I don't know
all of them. So, yes, no, there's a couple of things I probably shouldn't say.
Gosh.
I also know the Testament, so that's kind of a way to go.
I
don't want to be all, I've got a secret, but I do.
Yeah, and Eyes on Gilead is like no joke, by the way. You need to have seen the latest episode. don't just think, I'll just have a little listen to that if I haven't watched the episode, because they ain't playing. They are like about every minute of the show. But it's great for nerds like me because it's like full-on analysis. And Joanna, you would love it too. It's like full analysis of every lighting state, which I love. I love that stuff. It's like, what do you think was meant by that, the way the cape was thrown across the shoulder?
What does it mean? What does it mean?
I don't know. I think it foreshadowed that other thing that happened. Yes.
It's a bit much.
That's great.
Thank you to our guests, Joanna Fleming, and from Eyes on Gilead, Fiona Williams, for joining us to chat Handmaid's Tale. This special presentation is sponsored by SBS On Demand, where Season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale is available to stream exclusively right now. There are links in the show notes, of course, to SBS On Demand and to Eyes on Gilead. And thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, recorded at a Hub Australia media studio, hubaustralia.com. Find the workspace that's right for you.